You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome back to the Massive Report podcast. We are back at Saucy Brew Works after a one-week hiatus where we returned to the dreaded Zoom call, but we're back here at Michigan and 3rd.
It's just a sign of the times.
Yeah, well, that's true. But what we do not have is Brian Phillips. He continues to be way too busy for us, so I will again lead us off here. But again, this is the Massive Report podcast. Thank you all for listening. Like, subscribe, 5-star reviews, all that good stuff, if you don't mind. I'm here today, as you already heard, with Sam Fahmy. Sam, how's it going?
I'm much better than I was last week.
Yeah, I imagine. Sam had a bout of COVID that he had to get through, so that was part of the reason we did it via Zoom last week. Bart, how you doing?
Pretty good, and I'd just like to say that it's come to my attention that someone Zoom bombed and impersonated me the entire length of the last podcast, and seem to infer that I have less than, 100% confidence in Caleb Porter and Columbus Crew's ability to dominate on the road. And that's never been in question. So, I mean, I think maybe we need a password protect or something else next time it's on Zoom, because we can't let these people come in and soil the good name of the Massive Report podcast.
Good point. I just say we do it in person as much as possible. So, and if, stepping in to give us a fourth person today for Brian, Drew McDaniel. Drew, thanks for coming back. This is what, third time you've come out with us?
I think second.
A second time? All right, cool. Well, welcome back. As Bart just alluded to, we're going to talk about a Crew win on the road for the first time this season, which was nice to see. They beat Atlanta 2-1 on Saturday. With the international break coming up, we don't have a game to preview, but we'll spend a good amount of time talking about this game and the first 3 points for the Crew on the road this year, and we'll talk a little international soccer once we get to the end. But I think we should start where it all began for the Crew on the road, which was within the first minute getting a corner kick and scoring off said corner kick, which we were talking before the podcast. Drew, we think that last time they scored a corner kick might have been Jonathan Mensah in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's what I recall. You know, Jonathan Mensah loves scoring in Atlanta. We also seem to only want to win away in Atlanta. Yeah. So that's a thing. But Pedro, whipping in that corner.
Yeah.
Looked good.
Well, and I've written on more than one what we learned this year that I think Pedro should be taking corners. I don't know how many corners he's going to be taking soon, but we'll get to the injuries here in a minute. But just, I think that was a well-delivered ball. I'm not sure about the Atlanta defending. We can talk about Bobby Shuttleworth being subpar throughout the whole game. But
I'd like to. Let's do that, please.
But well, he successfully took out his own player.
Yeah, it was great. I was watching the replay here earlier, and it was like, oh, well, he didn't have any help. Oh, no, that was him taking. All right, never mind.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt your chances of scoring a goal when the goalkeeper doesn't come off his line quick enough, the guy defending Jonathan doesn't stick with him, and then another guy gets injured on the play. One of three, maybe even four injuries coming out of that game, which you never like to see, but getting a goal in the opening minute really changed things, I thought, for the guys. I mean, we've seen it the other way too many times this year where the Crew were playing down, and Atlanta still had plenty of chances, but like I said, the opposite has been true for the Crew against Nashville and some of these teams where that team gets an early goal and is just able to ride it out, and the Crew, for the most part, were able to do that. What did you guys make of how that changed what could have been a tricky game for the Crew?
First of all, I think Atlanta, I think they probably have the jerseys to blame for this because, again, those jerseys that the Crew are wearing are basically identical
right.
to Atlanta's little peach jersey. So I didn't get that. They were dumb jerseys anyway. Good, let's save the environment, but those are dumb. Back to the game. I think we determined, and it may have been announced on the broadcast, that is the earliest goal scored in regulation in Crew history.
Yeah, I think
the first one in the first minute
put out on the broadcast.
It absolutely changes
in the regular season.
Yeah, obviously the Justin Miram one. Yeah, that's the one.
No one in the stadium was there.
Right.
So, I mean,
I was in the stadium, but I was covering the game, so I was there pretty early.
I was there also.
I mean, we've been talking, and Sam made the point a number of times about how the team was, to borrow a hockey analogy, gripping their sticks a little too hard and just kind of trying to force things and force that goal, and you know, maybe playing playing too nervous is because of that. And I think it was a great, you know, conglomeration of a lot of things, of Pedro getting in there and getting the chance to take that corner, of Jonathan Mensah, you know, a guy who we've been kind of looking for him to. He's the captain, he's the leader, he's you know, first and foremost, you want him to take care of business at the other end of the field, but you also want him to be somebody that kind of sets the tempo and sets the mood and creates the mood for this team and leads by example. That's a great way for him to do that. He is, you know, reminds you how dangerous he can be in the air with some good service. And I think, you know, this is a Crew team that didn't expect to find themselves leading on the road at all, just as much as Atlanta didn't expect to find themselves, you know, maybe even more so than Atlanta didn't expect to find themselves trailing at home through a minute. And I think it completely, you know, it just takes everything that you've planned for from Atlanta out, you know, throws it all out the window, and gives Caleb's supporters the team to play on the front foot, which they haven't had many opportunities to of late.
Well, also, to win the corner, Yeboah made a pretty aggressive move in, so that's good early play right there.
And hopefully he's all right, too.
Yeah, and we'll get to the injuries here. I want to talk about the good stuff first. And, you know, I go back to Pedro taking the corners. Look, I think Lucas does a great job on the direct free kicks. Obviously, he's one of the best in league history already at that. But you have a guy in Pedro who's taking corners. He's a guy who plays on the wing anyway, so his crossing is kind of his forte. And I just think when you've seen Pedro take corners this year, and even going back to last year, they just seem to be more dangerous. Now, again, the defending wasn't great, but you put it right in the mixer, and you saw once Pedro went out, Aiden Morris was taking them, and he was taking some from one side anyway. But it just, what, nothing's as dangerous. And I think Pedro, when healthy, is the guy who you want taking those, be it a corner, be it an indirect free kick from out wide. You know, I don't think that says anything negative about Lucas. I just don't know if that's one of Lucas's strong suits. And for a team that's struggling to score goals, to put one in a dangerous spot on a dead ball like that, I think is kind of essential to getting easier finishes.
I think it's kind of like you're trading in one for the other, though Lucas is obviously significantly more on target than Pedro can be. But, yeah.
Pedro has that goal from the free kick against DC this year.
True. But it's the balance of, yeah, I always thought it was weird that, like, Higuain took the corner kicks. Yeah. I always thought it was weird that Lucas takes the corner kicks, because I'm like, I'd rather have those guys, like, on the outsides of the box by the arc, ready for any of those rebounds, and that's something that we lack. Or have them on the back post, where nobody ever is on the back post to do anything about all the balls that go all the way to the other side. So, but, yeah, Pedro put that on a dime, and Jonathan attacked it in textbook style. Full on, met it with power, met it right to the side of the netting. I mean, that's kind of what you want, and then the guy obviously couldn't cover him.
Well, and I think, too, you mentioned Atlanta not expecting to be down. This is an Atlanta team that's had similar struggles to the Crew this year, especially based on expectation. They were only 3 points up on the Crew coming into the game. So you get a team that's already kind of mentally a little bit fragile, and we've seen this with the Crew, and you deal them a blow like that so early on, now they're starting to press a little bit and, you know, to use your hockey analogy, grabbing the sticks a little tighter. And I think you saw that in some of their play. You know, if that game's 0-0 and Atlanta starts to get a foothold there, I think maybe things come out differently. But now you're playing from behind. You don't have your best player in Joseph Martinez, arguably your best player, on the field from the start. And, you know, things are a little hairy for them. And I think you saw that was kind of the way it played out.
Well, it played out a lot like the Crew games have played out, as we've been behind, where they had 70% possession in the game, like 22 shots, not goals, obviously. So, like, that's kind of the games we've been watching. So it's great to see this get up and catch a break, because it seems like we just haven't been catching the breaks, just offside calls or just not being able to hit the target.
I think the other difference is this was a game where Aloy Room, I mean, looked vintage. He was incredible. A couple of, you know, great saves there on headers. When it is that 1-0 game, when Atlanta has the chance to take that momentum right back, and if Atlanta ties it, you know, early there and whatever, that one header that he cleared right off that line in, I think, the 6th or 7th minute,
yeah.
Well, I think this game
I've got all these written down. Yeah. I went back and went through Aloy's, not all his saves, just big saves. 8 minutes and 8 seconds is the one you're talking about, the header off the corner, where he goes, you know, full hand over head extension. 10 minutes later, almost exactly, it was a ball played to the right-hand side of Atlanta's attack. Jonathan tried to get there. Aloy, now this one was shot high over his head. I mean, over his head. He had to put his arms up, but still, you know, a save he needs to make. Otherwise, it's roofing it, and you're tied. 29-15, there's a back heel that Etienne, just, you know, not being a natural defender, wasn't ready for. And Aloy makes another good save, you know, getting low and reaching to his right. Then we go to the second half. Crew are up 2-0 at this point, but still to this point. Jonathan headed a ball kind of out of the box to the side, and I forget who the attacker was, but made a good play. Steven Moreira tried to block it, but Aloy had to get down quick, made another great save, and then he had two in stoppage time. The one where, again, he from the shot from distance, and then another shot diving on the line, you know, basically on the line. So I know Aloy's received a decent amount of criticism, and I think it's been overly critical. I think he's played well, and maybe his salary coming out didn't help things, being the highest paid goalkeeper in MLS, according to the players' union. But, you know, I think that's what Aloy's best at. And that's what I was telling people Saturday night, was Aloy is a shot stopper. Now, say what you will about some of his distribution. He still kicked a few goal kicks out of bounds and things like that. Say what you will about maybe the way he commands his penalty area. But when you need a guy to make a stop, more often than not, he's going to do it. And I think, you know, Saturday night was exactly what you pay a guy like Aloy Room to do.
Yeah, I mean, that backheel stop, that was a beautiful play. I thought that was it right there. So that, I mean, his play gave us the momentum throughout the game to get to that second goal.
Yeah, and he was named the team of the week along with Jonathan Mensah today, which I think both players, you know, well-deserved. You go to Atlanta and, you know, essentially shut out that attack for the vast majority of the game. Atlanta scores on that bicycle kick late.
Only bike that's never mattered. Just meaningless bike from Dom Dwyer.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't have anything to do with Josh Williams being in the picture there, would it, Bart?
I mean, he actually was – he had his head right there. He was ready to get kicked in the head.
I don't
he would have taken it for the team.
I don't think there was anything wrong defensively there. You know, I talked to somebody on Sunday who said they thought Jonathan could have reacted a little bit better. Again, I don't think you expect Dom Dwyer to bicycle it from the six.
There's not even 6 feet between Jonathan and Josh Williams. So, I mean, that was a really risky play on Dom Dwyer's part, but it paid off.
Yeah.
His wife's still a better player.
I think they're married anymore. I think they got divorced, if I remember correctly. Sidney LaRue and him, I believe.
Sidney LaRue is a better player.
Let's go back to...
He should have taken her name.
Let's go back to the end of the first half. When Eric Hurtado gets on the board, Colin Johnson did his anatomy of the goal today that was published on Massive Report on this play. A pretty simple play, to be fair. I mean, it starts in defensively. You know, Darlington Nagbe plays it to Etienne on the wing, you know, still coming out of your attacking or defensive third. And Etienne just plays a long ball. And, I mean, Drew, you mentioned, you know, you did give up a number of chances to Atlanta. I think the Crew were okay with giving up chances, especially scoring the first goal, but I think even if they hadn't, they were looking to play on the counter, and that was the definition of playing on the counter. Long ball to Hurtado. I thought he did a really nice job to control that, and then obviously his ability to cut back in and the shot. And again, maybe a better keeper does better with that than Shuttleworth did, but A, I think huge to go up 2-0 before halftime. They say that's the worst lead in sport or in soccer to have at halftime. I disagree. I think two's better than one. That's just my math. But also for Eric Hurtado to get a goal. You know, I know he had one a couple weeks ago, but to get a second one in his first start in quite some time, I thought that was just huge momentum for the team going into the locker room.
I think it was one of those things that not only, like, scoring in the first minute, that was good momentum. Saves by Aloy, that added to the momentum. And then you have this play, which, okay, let's all be honest. When Hurtado got that ball, we all thought he was going to mess it up.
We all did. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
it is my longstanding stance that Eric Hurtado is an exceptional player who's not getting enough minutes, and I'm glad he finally got the opportunity to shine, as I knew he would.
You are totally lawyering right now, and I will not take it. But, you know, he got that ball. And as I was thinking about it on my way down here, actually, I was thinking about how the Crew played in the beginning of the season and how a lot of their goals were, a lot of it were based on dropping the ball to this empty person that has nobody around him, and they're just coming in and scoring. Not all of it was counter, but a lot of it was pretty close. It was good transition play, and that was literally the epitome of good transition play. Mm-hmm. A very good heads-up play by Etienne, and Hurtado actually made something, and it was a nice goal. Like, had a nice curl away from the keeper's hand. It was good. Like, it brought you joy.
It was exceptional, and I mean, I think, you know, the way the strength that he displayed on that too, and you know, I will admit, okay, I have not actually been Eric Hurtado's biggest advocate, and I'm not gonna become him from that, but I think
no DP deal.
We'll see, you know, but I think that's one of those, you know, I'm thrilled to absolutely get that air out of Eric Hurtado. I want people to temper the same way I was saying, temper your expectations about Miguel Berry. We need to, and I need to say this for myself more than anyone on this podcast, temper our expectations about Eric Hurtado. This is not the Eric Hurtado that we've seen at any of his other MLS stops. I think that's exactly what you want out of somebody getting a spot start, and I'm not going to hate on him for it. I thought it was an exceptional finish, and boy, if we can get more of that from him, that is going to be a plus, but I'm not holding my breath.
I think here's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
The difference that you saw between, imagine if Miguel Berry was in that spot and not Eric Hurtado. Unfortunately, I think Miguel Berry would have been pushed off the ball,
mm-hmm.
and it would have fizzled right there. I think Eric is a bigger, bulkier,
more
aggressive.
He looks like a little buff boy. He's more just aggressive, like, he's a brick shit house.
Right. And I think that helped in that particular position, because mm-hmm. he could have easily lost that. So while I'm not saying, you know, Eric Hurtado to be the starter for the rest of the season, what I will say is that if it helps him that we play better on the counterattack or in that transition play, then let that be a thing. Let's play more in the transition than that slow buildup.
And ultimately, I think that's what you want. You want that guy who can come in and be a bruiser for those last 30 minutes, for those last, you know, 15 minutes, especially if you've got a lead, where you can play that counterattack and where he can really excel. And that, if he can really carve a niche for himself to be that kind of player, I think that can make a real difference.
But I think you have to start playing that before you have the lead. Like, that's how kind of you get to the lead. Your defense is playing, especially when your defense is playing well. Like, Milos played pretty good. Jonathan was playing good. Steven Moreira was playing good. Pedro was. And even when...
Will Sands.
When Will Sands came in. Will Sands actually came in and kind of had a little bit of Aiden Morris in him, where he was kind of going a little bit more aggressively. Mm-hmm. But you want to play that counter. That is how you end up, I feel, how you end up generally scoring early, if your defense is locking things down. And then you're playing with a different attitude when you score early, and you have more of that. You can beat that defense a lot more on the counter or in transition play than if you're still tied at zero.
Oh, yeah, and I just meant I want him coming off the bench with the Crew with a lead.
Well, I think this set up really perfectly for him, because you had Miguel Berry, who has struggled. I don't think any of us are making any claims otherwise. Now, Eric scored a goal in that New England game, so he has a little bit of confidence. He scored when he's played for Crew 2. And then you set up in a way where you're going to sit back, you're going to look to counter. He makes more sense as that forward on the counter than Miguel Berry. And I think that does fit his game well, if you're going to do that, because I also think he can work well on the wing for this team. That's where he came in for Crew 2. And then, you know, he got his situation and he took it. And that's the difference between last year when he was in Atlanta, when they played in Atlanta. He had that breakaway that he missed. And I think, and I was talking to people about this after the game, you know, just imagine how differently maybe his trajectory is with the Crew. He gets the breakaway, he scores that goal, and maybe the confidence starts to build a little bit. And, you know, I don't know how much he plays, but I think this is a good sign. Now I think you've got to figure out how you want to play, because I do think being on the road is more where Caleb Porter's willing to sit back. I think at home they want to try and play a bit more, and I don't know if he fits that as well, though he can hold up play well, you know, with his bigger frame. Mm-hmm. So I think it will be interesting, but I do think this gives you a different dynamic because Giassi wasn't giving you that. He's not a burner, and not that Eric Hurtado's the fastest guy in the league, but he's got some speed on him, especially in those short bursts. So you've got this other option now, and fans for a while have been calling for Caleb Porter to do something different. He gave him a look. I think what's also interesting, Jason Russell Rowe called up from Crew 2, didn't get in the match, but I think that shows some confidence. This is the first time we've seen a Crew 2 player called up for an MLS game, and you know, had something gone different, had there been an injury to a forward, maybe Jason Russell Rowe does get some minutes. I don't know what he gives at the MLS level, but you are seeing, you know, trying some different things right now, because we know it's still going to be another month or so before they are able to make a signing and bring in a designated player striker. So I thought that was certainly a positive to see something different out of the team, and I'm glad it worked out all right.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to the counter for a little bit, I don't think Lucas works perfectly well with a counter strategy.
Agreed.
And I think that's maybe where that,
yeah, that's another,
that kind of comes in. But I was hoping to see Jason Russell Rowe, but I think the way the game went, especially with the injury issues, I just don't think it was right to bring him in. And that's maybe the plan was to bring him in. I don't know why you call him up if you're not going to bring him in. You had enough players on the bench. But
I don't think you're expecting to be up to nothing at the half.
Yeah, yeah. It might be true. Maybe they're trying to forward.
And for Hurtado to score.
And it does get him experience of going on the road with the team, yep, and being around that. So I think there's value to it regardless of...
And they could have definitely used him in the Crew 2 game the following
game. Yeah. We can talk about that later. Or we cannot, because that was hot and miserable. So I guess the question to kind of round out the striker conversation is... Now they have some time, but next Crew game, who would you like to see up top? We've seen Miguel Berry. I think we know that Miguel Berry can be better than he has been. We've also seen Eric Hurtado not take chances like that. So what do you each think in terms of who you would go with? Because it's not like it's next week where you're riding a hot hand. You know, they've got a 2 full weeks off before they play again. So what would be your approach up top?
Honestly, I think I would go, if I'm choosing between Miguel Berry and Eric Hurtado, I think I'm choosing Eric Hurtado right now. He's got more
even with Lucas 4-3-2-1, you know, that.
Yeah, even with that.
Okay. 4-2-3-1.
But you and I were talking about this beforehand. I'd honestly rather see Lucas up top because I think that gives us the best option to get the best 11 on the field.
I agree.
Because Morris is a beast in the midfield, and it's been difficult to get both Lucas and Morris on the field at the same time. Now, with Archer, we'll talk about that later, but like that might work itself out there. But that's what I would like to see.
Well, and the other, and I know Lucas, you know, wasn't able to go on international duty in Armenia, was, you know, saying, so I don't know that Lucas is back in a couple of weeks. Maybe, you know, maybe, you know, and I'm sure, look, I wouldn't mind the team holding him back, you know, even just saying, oh, yeah, he's injured, but we'll see. I'm an insane person. Insanity is, you know, doing the same thing and expecting a different result. And I would go with Miguel Berry. And just for the sake of look, I mean, I think the first choice would probably be Lucas, but you already, Drew, you already got dibs on that one. But I think it's, you know, would be interesting to see. Look, Miguel, we had some news break over the Twitters as we were doing this.
Nothing exciting. It has to do with another MLS.
Yeah, I know. We hate him. We hate both the player and the team. but you look at what Miguel Berry's, you've been benched now. Learn from that. See if you learn from that. See how he reacts to that, because he still ultimately has, I think, the higher ceiling than you're going to get from Eric Hurtado. And you need to know, just look, is Miguel Berry even, if anything, you want him as a guy that you can have coming off your bench and potentially creating something. So I think he needs to get some goal or get something going, or you need to try to get him going. You got what the most I think you'll ever get of Eric Hurtado. Maybe you'll get more, but right now I'd still go back to Miguel Berry and say, look, hey, there, he just challenged you. He just scored a goal of the year candidate. You can't do anything right now. Prove yourself. Displace this guy.
So I don't think you can make this question in a vacuum, because there's two two other parts that depend on that. One of them is how the what the plan for the game is, and then what your opponent is, and how those two work together in order to get an outcome like you did with Eric Hurtado. The other part is when you talk about the front three, you're really talking about the front three, not just who's playing at the top.
Yep.
So the front three, you can realistically go with Lucas, Hurtado, and Etienne, and all three of them can kind of switch places. So that gives more confusion for the defense to have to deal with, because they're all moving around. And you can even invert that to have Lucas down and Etienne and Hurtado kind of up higher, even though they're off to the side. And you kind of get that
false nine.
You get a false nine. It's not even a false nine. It's like you're playing with three forwards.
Yeah.
So Lucas still gets back into that playmaker, but it drops him back, which cuts down more on the defenses that are, like, as soon as Lucas gets the ball, there's three defenders on him. That opens up two players, and that their ability to use that. But again, it goes back to tactic and how you're playing against this team and the strength of the defense of that team, which Atlanta was not great.
Right. Well, and I mean, I think Caleb has said on more than one occasion that he doesn't think Lucas's strength is playing as the number nine, which, reading between the lines to me, is Lucas probably doesn't want to play the number nine, and Caleb doesn't want to upset his designated player. Which,
well, yeah, the Charlotte manager just got fired for that.
Yeah, so I see it. I agree with you, Drew. We talked about it last week on the podcast when we were throwing out ideas. I think Lucas playing as the false nine and Darlington playing higher up the field would benefit the team. I'm just not sure they're going to do it, at least not right now. But let's look at the rest of the game, because the Crew did a good job even giving up that goal to kind of see things out. We saw them go to 3/5 in the back, which we've seen a little bit of this year, but not a ton. And I think this was the first sort of extended, I say that in quotes, look with Josh, Milos, and Jonathan all really on the field together. So that's an interesting thing that maybe you see a little bit more going forward if they want to play that way. I know that's something Caleb's talked about in the past. But just what were your guys' impressions of kind of how the way the Crew handled the second half? Atlanta brings on Joseph Martinez. They bring on Dom Dwyer. You know, there's a lot of firepower coming off that Atlanta bench. And the Crew managed to, you know, more or less handle that game. Aloy Room was a big part of it, but handle that game and get 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about having a three-man back line plenty. Like, we'd like to see that happen with these three guys. I think it's realistic that we could run it. And depending on where Pedro is, maybe we could see that. Maybe that puts us in a better defensive spot. Compact the middle, maybe block those crosses. I think it would be great if we could see that more. I definitely don't want to see us dropping five in the back line consistently. So,
yeah, I don't think they would ever go straight five, but that, you know, I never know what to call that, you know, the three with the wing backs.
Yeah, I mean, it's three in the back or five in the back, depending on how you're playing. Those, I feel like it always is. But I'm especially if Pedro's down, I think I'm a little bit more interested in exploring it, because I think you're just looking at how do you get your best players out on that field, and I think you could put Steven Moreira up. I don't necessarily want Sands. I was not really impressed with what I saw. I think he made a couple mistakes and turnovers that were, in other circumstances, could, you know, if Aloy Room isn't playing out of this world. I mean, I just don't think he's ready for MLS yet. I would love to be wrong. But I could maybe be convinced into that three in the back. I think the real difference maker, though, is Aiden Morris. He led the team in tackles, led the team in interceptions, and you just get that energy from him. And again, Crew are undefeated in MLS this season. We don't talk about the Detroit game when Aiden Morris starts. And I think you have to find any way to get him on right now. And if not from a, you know, perspective of he gives your team a better chance to win, which, again, the statistics bear out. You also, this is a young player, 21, 22 years old. He needs to be getting games. He can't just be coming off the bench you know, and playing 15 minutes here or there every other, you know, every other game. At that point, I think want him loaning and starting for another MLS team. So I think anything, getting that middle three with those three midfielders is what you want to have. Now, hopefully, Arthur is going to be ready to go and you can do that again.
Yeah, well, that kind of leads into where I was going to go next. Just the kind of unfortunate part of this game, yes, 3 points on the road is huge, but you lose two, maybe three players from the game. Well, the only one that had to sub out was Pedro. Yao, he got hurt middle of the first half. I don't remember seeing the actual injury on TV. Drew and I were talking about this before we started recording. I feel like it must have happened off the ball because he just kind of sat down in the middle of the field is how kind of I remember it.
Yao?
No, Pedro.
Pedro.
Yeah. And then Yao, yeah, obviously there was the tackle. His ankle did not look good.
He was tackled multiple times very hard.
Yeah.
So his ankle twisted before a tackle came in.
Oh, was it? Okay.
So his was just on a plant.
I think you're right.
He was going
towards the end line.
Yeah, and he was just trying to whip the ball in and just planted
it
on
the
turf.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, and then we saw Artur late in the game really hobbling. He was at the Crew 2 game on Sunday, crutches and in a walking boot. Now, I don't want anyone to read into that too much because you obviously have this break here, and putting a guy in a walking boot can sometimes just be precautionary. But you'd rather him have been able to handle that. So we don't know much yet. The first, we're recording this Tuesday night, the first media availability, because it's an off week with the team, is on Wednesday. So hopefully we'll get more updates from Caleb Porter and the staff then. But certainly not three guys. And, you know, Artur and Pedro have obviously been crucial. And Yao, I felt like, is again starting to come on these last couple games. Not three guys you really want to have out of the lineup right now. I guess fortunately you have this break here to hopefully get them healthy regardless of what the injury is.
Also, MLS has Derek Etienne as leaving the game for injury, but that was for Josh Williams, so that was also probably game plan.
Yeah. I don't remember him dealing with anything, at least, you know, on the field, but I also don't always trust the MLS website.
We don't trust MLS, period.
Well, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. It's a good measure.
If you have to go without, I mean, Artur, you obviously have a like-for-like with Aiden, as Bart was just talking about. Pedro, there is Will Sands, and I do know that they're high on him, but from what we saw, I don't know, like Bart said, I'm not sure he's ready to be your guy at left back if Pedro misses some time.
Especially for full 90.
Yeah, right. And, I mean, you know, maybe more games helps a young player out. I don't know. And especially if he's preparing to start. But then you obviously, with Yao, you've seen the rotation at winger. You have James Igbekeme, who can come in. Luis Diaz. Alex Matan, who has kind of become a forgotten man. At some point this season, you're going to get Kevin Molino back. But that's still a little ways down the pipeline. So What are you guys thinking in terms of replacements? If, let's just assume the worst here, and that these guys are going to miss time, how do you feel like you handle it?
Well, I think Lucho is still out he broke his wrist.
Yeah.
So he might be out, but, like, I'm less worried about missing Yao, specifically because there hasn't really been production. I mean, he has come on in the last couple games, but James has been playing well. The Pedro one is the biggest miss, and I think that's where we can maybe try that three-man backline. Also, we haven't had Deganick, Williams, and Mensa all at the same time, either healthy or on the team for, like, traveling reasons.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, two of them are gone for this window, so, you know, they maybe don't even get a chance to really work on that in training that much.
Mm-hmm. I agree that I think the Santos loss is the biggest. He's been a revelation at left back.
Mm-hmm. And his corner kicks.
Yeah, his corners and attacking. I mean, it reminds me again of when, you know, Harrison Offal was coming into this league, and it's like, yes, he may have some defensive, and of course Harrison's a, you know, natural or originally a, you know, right back, but he may have some, you know, warts on the defensive side, but he plays hard defensively, and he's so dominant attacking that, you know, something you're not used to seeing as a defender. But I think that's going to be the biggest one, and that's where my instinct is they'll go with Sands. If anything, you know, just to see, look, we're high on this kid. Let's give him a chance. And I suspect that they go back to, you know, the familiar 4-2-3-1, especially if Lucas is healthy. And you know, just subbing in Aiden Morris in there. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them do the 4-3-3 again and slot Ibukeme back in there where they've been slotting him in lieu of Aiden Morris for those last couple games, just to get him on. And I think that 4-3-3 formation, for as unsuccessful as it's been in some cases, I like seeing it.
Yeah, well, and they also have Isaiah Parente, and they also have Sean Zawatsky, who was getting some good minutes in preseason and has played a good amount with Crew 2. So there are, I mean...
How many times have either of them made the 18 this season?
Yeah, not many.
Parente was on the roster for Atlanta.
Yeah, he was there. But my point is, if there's a position that you could handle with some depth issues, there is depth there. Left back, to your point, Bart, is significantly thinner. And I want, you know, if Pedro, you know, not to put this out there, but if Pedro's going to miss significant time, does that mean now you have to use some of your assets this summer to go out and get a left back, you know, if you're not ready?
I think you needed to already.
And then that could be. And, you know, that would give you more options. But, like, we've talked so much about them bringing a designated player striker. Well, now if you're having to really go get a starting left back or another winger, if Pedro maybe was going to shift up, I think you hope that everything's okay and that you don't have to worry about these problems. The guys get healthy relatively quickly, but it could mean some changes to kind of the thought process of things.
I think a starting left back is not going to cost nearly as much as a good striker.
No, but
it is costly. It is costly. A starter in MLS, for that matter.
How's Milton doing? Does anyone know?
I think he won a championship over in the Swiss League.
Instead of old boys.
Who knows? I think it's important to think about. I lost my train of thought.
Well, while you think of it, I did want to point out, I just thought about this. You could, in theory, we've seen Derek play right back.
Yeah.
You could move him back, whether you want him on the right or left, because he's obviously played on the left wing. You have Steven Moreira, who's a veteran, who could probably play either side. So, I mean, you could get creative with it, too, without having
Marlin
to do.
Marlin was my thought.
I was going to say.
Yeah, you have Marlin.
That's
now.
What I was going to say.
He was back. I did see today. He was back. He was – last week he was doing some things off to the side, but he was back in with the champion team that they tweet out the picture of today. Eric Hurtado also on that team. It's been a good last few days for Eric Hurtado.
Eric Hurtado at left back.
I mean – honestly, with the way he just runs up and down, that wouldn't be...
No.
I don't know how well he tackles, but...
I mean, he probably form tackles very well. Yeah. I just don't know about slide tackle.
He's an Aussie Rules football body. Yeah. So I guess there is a little bit more depth there if you want to be creative and move somebody over to the left side. But, yeah, I still don't feel great about
it. Hear me out. Aiden Morris. He doesn't have to be a wing back. Just like you said, he led the team in tackles. All he needs to do is, one, not cause a penalty, because that is very possible, but two, all he has to do is shut people down. And then he's a good passer. He can pass out of the back.
Well, but you also want him getting forward, and I don't know about the crossing with his left foot. But his brother plays left back.
He can still be decoy.
His brother is with Crew 2 has played left back, so
not great, but
no.
Sure.
But I'm just saying it's in the family, I guess, to your point. Though his brother was not a left back until coming to Crew 2.
He was a winger.
Yes, yeah, he was.
Ford.
Yeah. We obviously hope that these guys are okay. You couldn't ask for a better time to have an international break, and the Crew are actually using it, unlike some of the other teams in MLS. Using it's probably the wrong terminology, but they will get a break here. Players are off basically for a long weekend starting Thursday till, I believe, Monday or Tuesday. So they will get some time off, but they'll also still be training. And as you mentioned, Drew, there are a few guys that will be away on international duty. Milos, he's with Australia. Derek is with Haiti. Jonathan Mensa with Ghana. Aloy Room with Curaçao. And Crew 2's Isaac, I believe I'm saying this right, Atking, is with Puerto Rico, and all of them have competitive matches over the course of this break.
I was really surprised by that.
Yeah. Well, the World Cup calendar year has been altered quite a bit, and I think people are still trying to figure out how to do this with no Summer World Cup and everything being pushed back with COVID and then the World Cup being in November. So, they are all playing in at least a couple competitive matches. Jonathan with some AFCON qualifying, Aloy and Etienne with CONCACAF Nations League, and Degnik is still trying to qualify with Australia for the World Cup. They've got a win to get into the final play-in game. And then Puerto Rico, which is where Iking is. Sorry, I'm reading this one. He has a Nations League too in CONCACAF. So some crew guys will be busy, and there will be things you can kind of follow along with that. The U.S. also plays, but there's no crew players involved with that, so we won't touch on that too much. But there will be guys busy. One thing before
Not even
we
former crew players.
Correct, but a former crew coach, a couple right. of them actually. One thing I wanted to bring up with the injuries, and I forgot to mention it. MLS needs to get rid of the turf.
Yeah,
that needs
I was
to
waiting
not.
For that.
I mean, and I, you know, I grew up playing on turf. You know, we played on it all through high school and whatnot, and. You know, for a in comparison to most high school soccer fields, which are usually just grass football fields, I liked playing on it much better. But at this level, it exists too much in this league. And now, at one point, I understood it for certain teams where, you know, you're New England, you're playing in an NFL stadium because you don't have anywhere else to go. It's time for New England to build a stadium. Seattle, Portland, I understand it rains a lot there. There's enough money in this league to take care of soccer
Portland's
fields.
Portland's got grass, don't they, or are they on turf?
They might have been on turf originally is what
I think they were on turf until like a couple years ago when they did the stadium renovation.
Yeah, they definitely did at one point play on turf. Maybe Vancouver, I don't know. I feel like one more of the Pacific Northwest teams are. Maybe it's just Seattle at this point.
It's better than AstroTurf if we're going to be
for sure.
honest. But yeah. I will say this. In a world where technology exists where you can roll in a grass field and they're doing it around the world, some of those teams that are playing in football fields can roll in a grass field and do that.
And I mean, that's if you're looking at a place like Gillette Stadium, they're not going to redo that to do that for the New England Revolution. But what the New England Revolution needs to do is find a place and build a stadium. I mean,
absolutely.
It's, you know, this is an original MLS franchise that is still playing in a football stadium. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure why MLS is continuing to allow teams to come in the league with football stadiums. And I know Atlanta was built with soccer in mind, Mercedes-Benz and all that. But, you know, you're seeing you mentioned the number of injuries Atlanta's already had this year. They have another one. Now, I don't know if that was really turf-related, but then the crew have multiple playing on that field. And, you know, it's just – it's not meant for this sport. And I think it – you know, it's time that this league gets – you know, you want to talk about being one of the best leagues in the world and this, that, and the other thing. You know, there's just no reason for these guys to be suffering. And not to say that injuries aren't going to happen on grass. They certainly do. But you see it way more on these turf fields.
Well, and I think that's one of the indicators, too, and I would be interested to see how many, you know, what is the, I don't know, injury rate for opposing teams when they're playing at a place like, you know, Megatron's Butthole or in New England or some of these other places with turf. Because I think to an extent, you know, if you're used to it, if you're training with that every day, and you know, I guess... Crew is they have turf now
at
so maybe there
stadium.
Isn't a good excuse for Columbus.
But they're not doing it every day.
Exactly.
They'll do it. I imagine they did it probably. No, actually, last Friday before they left, they were out on the grass. So they have the ability to do it.
Yeah.
And Crew 2 plays on it, but you know, you shouldn't have to.
No, exactly. Regardless, and it's one of those, you know. It's one of, I think, the only policy where Don Garber has players' safety in mind over profits is the lightning strikes and delaying games, because again, they're to the point that you made, the fact that teams continue to come in without any plan for a soccer-specific stadium, and we are on our second soccer-specific stadium here in Columbus, the first team to ever commit to MLS. It is an absolute travesty. Don Garber's a hypocrite. I mean, we've said this stuff forever. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Hey, the turf might have also been costing the United States with Miles Robinson being out, blown Achilles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's too much injury-wise.
And it's got the little cancer pellets in it, too. Do the research.
Imagine Aloy Room diving all over that this weekend. So yeah, I think we've covered everything from the game. You know, we talked about some of the internationals. The U.S. stuff, I don't think that's what our listeners are here for, is to hear us talk about a game in Cincinnati on Wednesday evening. But we'll be good to see the U.S. get back out there. Zach Steffen, former Crew goalkeeper, had to pull out for family reasons, so he won't be there. So, you know, really, other than Greg, really no Crew representation. But obviously important games as you head to the World Cup in November. You want to get kind of a rhythm with as many of these guys as you can. And this will be sort of a dry run, but still a number of guys that are missing out on this one.
It's a close to full strength, almost, not quite.
Yeah, so hopefully they can play some games before then where they will be full strength. With that early round group, or their early group draw, they will not have as much time to practice together as other teams. But we'll touch on that plenty before. Anything else, guys, that you can think of from this week?
Is Yunus Mokhtar playing for Morocco in this game?
I don't think he is. I don't think he's on the national team.
Probably
radar.
Not. But I was trying to find a dubious Crew tie. Tie-in.
Yeah, so that'll probably do it.
Tune in Wednesday.
Yeah, right, yeah, we can find out on Wednesday night. No, I feel like Sam would know if given your connections.
Our AFCON expert.
Yes, my team lost the Champions League on Monday, but it's okay.
Sorry,
buddy. We
made
the championship three years in a row.
Well, that's something. The Crew would take three championship trips. New England did that once. They lost them all, but. The Buffalo Bills did.
Yeah.
So despite the Crew being out or being off next week, we plan on doing a podcast. We're going to do something a little different, maybe talk about the season as a whole, but there's a couple guests that we've been talking about having on that...
Josh Williams.
Well, let's see what Josh is up to. I'm sure he'd come have a beer with us. But like I said, they have a few days off, so he may get the hell out of Columbus for a few days. But, a few guests that we've been talking to have on and just haven't been able to find a good time. So we will have a podcast next week, and obviously we'll start to look ahead to the Charlotte game. What is that, June 7th?
18th.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. They play on the 11th.
Yeah, Charlotte, who just fired their coach, does play over this break, but the Crew have a nice break here.
Who are they playing?
New York Red Bulls.
There you go. So,
okay.
Nice Eastern
random.
Conference game.
Yeah,
there are.
What's his name? Their DP coach.
That's weird.
there are a handful of games still this weekend, right? I mean, it's not. I think there's still several, but I thank you guys for coming out, Drew. I thank you for making your second. We've decided appearance. Sam, thanks for plugging things in and pressing record and whatever else that goes into this. And Bart, thanks for having a beer with us.
As always.
For the Massive Report podcast, like, subscribe, listen to Brian's station, CD, whatever the numbers are now.
92.9.
There we go. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you next week.